This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
We're Germanic-speaking European countries.
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi. Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. And welcome to episode 7 of the Germanic American Podcast, back in our makeshift studio in the Damen Salon at the JI building on Summit Avenue. Now, in case you don't know what the Damen Salon looks like, come on by, check out our building and visit us. So that's the open invitation. The invitation continues because we do have a special member night coming up on Saturday, April 27th from 6:30 through 8:30 p.m., where it's all about the Rhineland. As somebody from Vienna, I know exactly nothing about the Rhineland, so I have to, of course, look to those who teach you. And in this case, he's going to teach us as he's going to be presenting the Rhineland tour that you can take with us here at the GAI on the 27th. Bastian, welcome to the podcast. And we also have Claudia.
Guten Tag, hallo.
And first question right to Bastian, Rhineland. What geographic whereabout are we talking about? Where is it at? What am I even looking at the map?
Well, you're asking the tough question right off the bat. Well, as you probably know, it's not a state. So defining what the Rhineland is really not all that easy and all that clear. It has only been referred to as a region, as a cohesive region for, I don't know, a couple hundred years or so. Like really in the grand scheme of things, not all that long. And that definition has changed over time, and it seems to still change and evolve. There are some rough borders. We have basically the Niederrhein in the north, where it starts a little, like right around the Ruhr River.
So is the Niederrhein, would you then say the Lower Rhine, if that were translated?
Yeah, that like, would be the Lower Rhine region. So it doesn't go all the way. Well, I guess first of all, we need to establish that it's not the whole Rhine River that goes from Switzerland all the way to the North Sea, because theoretically you would think, why isn't that all Rhineland? Well, it's not. It's really a section, well, right around the middle, maybe the lower third of the river, going from that lower Rhine region all the way south to maybe Mainz in Rhineland-Pfalz. The main part is in Nordrhein-Westfalen. And right along a list of large cities, namely Köln, Cologne, Düsseldorf, some of the Ruhrgebiet cities.
Like so it would almost be like referring to Minnesota as being in the Midwest would be sort of the correlation to saying it's the Rhineland?
To an extent, yeah. I feel like the Midwest is also a region that is not that clearly defined.
Right.
Depending on who you ask, you're going to get different definitions, right? Yeah.
That one makes sense. What's significant about the Rhineland? I mean, I think that's a loaded question, a very broad question, but if you just take sort of the 30,000 foot view, if you will, from a macro perspective before we dive into details, what is it that stands out immediately when we think Rhineland?
Well, I think it's economically extremely important. It's got a lot of large cities, so it's definitely a population center. Being all along the Rhine River, it kind of makes sense how it would have come to grow into a very significant economic, then also cultural region, since it's like really a center of commerce, like being able to transport things up and down the river. So that historically makes a lot of sense. And really, as it is not a clearly defined region, it also is a very diverse region with a lot of different elements. We'll probably speak about it, but we have different dialects, there are different landscapes. And through that diversity, I feel like it's a very rich region that doesn't necessarily get the international attention that some other famous German regions get.
But it is known for its wine, right? The Rhineland region is known for its different kinds of good wine.
The southern portion, yes.
Yeah, and it's like Rhineland-Pfalz.
It goes into that diversity part because the more north, central to northern part is really not warm enough and too flat for wine. So where I'm from, having grown up in Düsseldorf and Köln, that's more beer,
industrial.
That's more industrial and blue collar and beer country.
And that's where you said, right, where the Rhine was that main shipping artery and transport and trade artery.
Very much so.
But that again talks to the, you know, the diversity of the region, where it's not just any one thing. It's, you know, wine in the southern part, then, you know, the river kind of runs through it all. And then in the Ruhr area, it's more the commerce and industrial.
Absolutely.
You're originally from Düsseldorf, you just mentioned. You've just recently became also an American. Congratulations to obtaining your citizenship.
Thank you.
When you think back about Düsseldorf, how often, A, do you go back to begin with? And when you think back about your home city, what's significant about Düsseldorf?
I try to get back there every year and a half or so, if I can swing it. Every year has proven to be a little too ambitious. And I've been gone now for about 8 years. So I've been back a handful of times. And I think I call both Düsseldorf and Cologne home, really. Mm-hmm. In a way, and for different reasons. And I really think very much big city life, even more so probably than here in the Twin Cities, and definitely more so than in the greater Midwest or in greater Minnesota. So I'm thinking lots of culture, lots of concerts, museums, sporting events, big arenas, stadiums. Like, there's just a lot going on in a very small space compared to here.
Yeah, it's a very densely populated area.
It is.
You know, that's one of the things in that whole region. If you talk Düsseldorf and Köln, I travel to both quite a bit on business, and they're not that far apart to begin with. But it's very densely populated with a lot of large cities just back to back to back to back to back. If you drive down the Autobahn, you see all these large cities with Essen and Düsseldorf, Neuss, Köln, Bonn. I mean, it's just they're all just right next to each other.
So never a dull moment, I suppose.
Not at all.
I just glance across the room here, and I notice that you have a ton of notes written down. So of course I have to ask, in terms of what's important for you to actually let the audience know about the Rhinelands, instead of just me asking unqualified questions.
Questions haven't been unqualified at all, and actually we've been touching on a lot of what I've what I've prepared. Always try to be over prepared rather than under prepared. It's the German part, not so
That's
much
the teacher.
Rhineland. Maybe the teacher.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, the question, what is it even, and why do we care, why does it matter, which is exactly what we've been talking about, is kind of the guiding element, because I presume that not everyone is at home in Rhineland, and knowing, like you said, you have no idea. And
yeah, even as an Austrian, I've been to Düsseldorf once, to Neuss, I think I've been there once, and that's about the extent. And to be honest, If I hadn't been pointed towards those two cities being in the Rhineland, I would have never made that connection. So I'm about as foreign as probably most people who are actually listening to this right now. So this is truly just educational.
Yeah, and that is kind of my assumption. So starting there, and then, of course, it's not just a Rhineland armchair travel night. It's also a member dinner. So food is going to be a large portion of the night, because we're not just going to serve any food. We're going to serve food that's predominantly based out of Rhineland.
What are the dishes in the Rhineland? You knew that this is going to come, right?
Of course. So the big thing for the dinner is going to be Rheinischer Sauerbraten. That's like a marinated pot roast. That's kind of like sour and sweet a little bit. And it comes with red cabbage that we call Rotkohl, and potato dumplings, Kartoffelklöße. And we have more in store for everyone that's coming that night. I don't want to give it away, like all of it, but it's going to be authentic. And there will be beverages as well. We're hoping to be able to serve some local beers.
Are you going to be able to have some Kölsch?
I sure hope so.
Right, because that, I mean, in addition to the wines, there is that tradition, and forgive me, because I'm not from the Rhineland, the whole thing between Altbier and Kölsch.
Yeah.
And it, oh, it's a huge thing. You need to make sure that if you're in Düsseldorf, that you, and yeah, in Köln, even though they're only maybe 30 miles away from each other, or maybe a little bit more, but Kölsch is a thing in Cologne and Alt. And again, help me here because I'm scrambling.
You had your geography right. The 30 miles are a pretty good estimate. It's not more. You can really drive from the center of Cologne to the center of Düsseldorf in like 30 minutes. And yes, the beer is very much different. We're actually, we could throw Pils in the mix, Pilsner, on top of that, which is like just another half hour north. So then you have Pilsner, Alt, Bier, and Kölsch. And they are distinctly different. And Düsseldorf and Cologne in particular have a huge rivalry that extends into just about everything, including beer.
You know, I'm surprised that actually nobody has made a show yet called Beer Wars. Every single time I listen to, I mean, Austria has a pretty solid beer culture to begin with, but the Germans, you guys just take this to an entirely new level.
Yes.
The seriousness behind the craft of brewing, which in itself really truly is a craft, the Reinheitsgebot that dates back to, I think, the 12th century or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 1300, yeah.
So, I mean, this has been around for a while. So, truly, beer is important. It's a way of life. It's a cultural expression. But the micro expressions, even between cities, that is something that really surprises me. Between Cologne and then Düsseldorf, different beers, different associations. Do you know what actually contributes to the differences there?
As far as the brewing goes?
Yeah.
I can't explain it at like the level of a brewmaster.
Sure.
However, I can say that the Altbier is a darker beer. Mm-hmm. It's much maltier. It's like it's got the dark roasted malts. Whereas Kölsch is a very light colored beer. It's also light in substance and it's fairly light tasting. It doesn't have a whole lot of bitterness.
It's more like a lager, isn't it?
It is. And so There really is a pretty distinct difference between the two, and both cities kind of relish their beer culture and are very, very proud of it. And that beer war that you're mentioning goes so far as that Kölsch is basically a protected term, so you can only brew Kölsch when you're within a certain distance, within a certain radius of the Cologne Cathedral. Of
no
the Kölner
way.
Dom. If you're outside of that, you can't in Germany sell your beer, even if it's brewed in that style, as Kölsch. So when I see here in the US, where you find in craft breweries or whatever, you see like Kölsch style or something.
Uh-huh.
When they leave out the style, I get kind of offended because they can't call it Kölsch, because surely they're not here in Minnesota,
right,
within that radius of the Cologne Cathedral.
That goes to say that, and I think this is something we don't commonly mention, or at least I don't get around to it when I teach, is just really to build the connection, the deep, intricate connection from food or beer, respectively in this case, to the expression of our culture and our value system. That when you look at beer at a local brewery that calls itself something that conflicts with what you know to be better or more authentic, rather. So that's an interesting expression right there. Rather unexpected. How important is beer to us?
It's huge in Germany, obviously, right? I mean, here in the U.S., this whole, not even resurgence, but this whole microbrewery thing, those of us coming from Germany, we were like, well, duh, it's been there all along, right? I mean, we've had local and regional brews there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and there are... It's getting more and more in Germany, but it used to be that a certain style of beer was only available in that region. And if you traveled outside of that region, you drank the other region's beer. And so if you go to Köln, you drink Kölsch. But maybe in Stuttgart, where I'm from, it was really, really hard to get Kölsch, if at all, or Weizenbier, right? The wheat beer. That's very Bavarian. And it it's probably not that long ago that you could get Weizenbier in the larger glasses up in northern Germany. It was very regionalized. And all of these breweries have been around for hundreds of years, and they had really control over the beer market in that region.
Things I had no idea about. Yeah. Okay. Good. What's next on your sheet that we need to consider?
Wait, you mean we need more than beer and its history and context? That's not enough?
Yeah. Come on. That's all you need to know about Germany. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, as if that wasn't enough high culture already, I will talk a little bit about language and unique dialects, similar to what we just talked about with the beer. You can drive 20, 30 minutes and have a different dialect. And run into a different dialect, and I'll sample a few kind of expressions, and I don't know if you noticed when you first introduced me, I said "Tag zusammen" rather than "Guten Tag," which is already one of the dialects. That one comes from the Ruhrgebiet region, so "Tag zusammen" comes from there. The Kölsch people, Cologne people, would just say "Tag." Mm-hmm. And the Düsseldorf people would say Joden Dach, which almost sounds Dutch. So we'll have a few of those, and from there also dive into music a little bit. And I will try to sample like some popular music, popular culture, which in case of the Rhineland region gets us pretty quickly into Carnival as another big topic of the region, because both in Köln and in Düsseldorf, Carnival is a huge thing.
Which one is bigger?
I got to be careful here. Do you have international subscribers? Do you have any subscribers in Germany?
Yes, we do. We actually have subscribers and listeners from Egypt. I just found that out last night when I checked our podcast stats. So whoever is listening in Egypt, welcome to the podcast.
Okay, well, I'm hoping that the Egyptian listener will not mind whether I go one direction or the other with this question. They're two of the biggest ones in Germany. And again, have their completely own language surrounding them and how they do things. The Düsseldorfers say Hilau. Uh-huh. In Cologne, we say Alaf. And that's the expression for like the Carnival,
that's
shout
pretty.
Out loud.
And we're really just talking 30 miles difference, really.
Yep. That's it.
It's interesting and fascinating how quick language actually changes. And I mean, the Düsseldorfer obviously would understand the Kölner, and the Kölner would understand the Düsseldorfer, I'm assuming.
For the most part, yes. I do have to say, full disclosure, I am not an expert at dialects, mm-hmm. But just having lived in three different parts of the Rhineland region, in Köln, I can have a hard time. I can have a hard time when someone really like a 60, 70, 80-year-old man or woman will go and completely dive into their Cologne roots. They can lose me.
And I won't understand a word at all. The dialects in German are a completely different language. It's not just the same words pronounced differently. They're completely different words. And I think that's the difference between dialects in the German language where, you know, I mean, we all probably have a different word for potato, right? And some other things where here in the U.S., you have the same word, you just pronounce it differently.
Let's compare notes. Potato in Düsseldorferisch.
Kartoffel.
Kartoffel, Kartoffel. With a PF.
Well, yes.
Or what, okay. What about Kölsch? Do you know the Kölsch word?
I don't.
Yeah, because Kölsch is really a completely different language.
And the Stuttgarter?
Krombier.
So the Austrian, the Viennese, would say der Erdapfel.
Yeah.
So the apple of the earth.
I've heard that one before. Pomme de terre. French,
yes, yes.
So again, different words, right? And I mean, there used to be, and many of us, and I'm dating myself, got exposed to the Kölsch dialect through a band called BAP. And they were a probably fairly famous band in Germany in the 80s and 90s or something.
They kept going strong for much longer than that, though.
But they sang in Kölsch. And we're all singing along, and we don't understand. I mean, they might as well have been singing in a completely different language, because some of the chorus you could understand, but then once they start singing, you're just like, I have no idea what they're saying.
When you compare and contrast Düsseldorf to the Twin Cities, what stands out to you?
The river is much more accessible as like a dominating geographical feature. I've always been struck by how little of the river is like just at the center of people's everyday lives here in the Twin Cities. You can go and see the river. You can cross the river via various bridges, but I feel like I can live in the Twin Cities and for most of the year never see the river. And I feel like both in Köln and Düsseldorf, so much of life centers right around the river. To the extent where we even talk about in both cities, in most of the cities up and down the river, where there is a right and a wrong side to live within the city, like along the river, there's like the correct and the incorrect side.
Yeah.
There are local like names for those sides. In Köln, the right side of the Rhine is called the Schelzig, which is like the kind of the silly, the wrong, the funky side.
What makes it the wrong side?
Well, it's grown out of history where originally the original cities way back when that were basically surrounded by a wall to secure the city. Mm-hmm. Essentially, the river was the natural border on one side of the city. And then you have a kind of half circle of wall around that. So that original core would have been on either the right or the left bank of the river. So as the cities grew later and didn't need that protection, that solid protection to the outside anymore, cities were able to grow on both sides. So they expanded and expanded oftentimes to the other side of the river, which to people, even to this day, this is, I mean, we're talking hundreds of years of city growth, but even to this day, many people are still insisting on there is a correct and an incorrect side, and they would never move to the wrong side of the Rhine.
So the wrong side essentially being outside of the old city walls and the right side being protected inside the city walls.
Exactly.
Is there still some rubbing elbows and rivalry between the people who feel righteous and the ones who are pointed out to be on the wrong side? Is there still some of that going on?
You can break it down to like even that level, yes. I mean, it's obviously not serious, but... Right. I would argue that there are probably still a good number of people that would never consider moving to what is considered the wrong side of their town.
I kind of want to put Bastian on the spot a little bit. One of the big things in Köln or Cologne, what people know is the Kölner Dom or the Köln Cathedral, right? And that is, I believe, a World Heritage Site, right? A UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Yes.
What do you know about the Kölner Dom?
Well, I know it was built over like literally hundreds of years from the first like starting of the process until it was actually finished. I don't know how many hundreds of years.
But when did the original foundation start?
I should know that, and I don't, because I'm really not great at getting my years right.
Yeah. I mean, since we are just right down the road from the St. Paul Cathedral, people may think, well, you know, we've seen a cathedral before. Well, you haven't until you've seen the Kölner Dom.
Yes.
The Kölner Dom is, I think, one of the largest cathedrals in the world.
Yep.
And, I mean, it is imposing. I've traveled in that area, and you can see it driving down the Autobahn. You know you're getting close to Köln because you can see it from a distance. It is humongous.
It is impressive.
Yes, and it is unbelievably impressive. So, of course, it would take hundreds of years.
So,
I see Michael's looking it up. Thank you. Because
well, it is, for one, it is the seat of the Archbishop of Cologne. Further on Earth, it was actually declared a World Heritage Site in 1996. It attracts upwards of 20,000 people a day, and it is currently the tallest twin-spired church at 157 meters tall, which equates to about 520 foot, give or take. And since we were talking about dates, for one, the style in which it is built is Gothic, and the years built... There were actually three different time frames, if you will. Started in 1248 through 1473, Then they took a short intermission and went for lunch. Came back in 1842 to 1880, and then returned in 1950. And it's continually being restored. So the building process as such has probably ended, but I would guess that the materials themselves just degrade over time. And so much like any other cathedral in Europe and any other church, it is a continuous effort to keep things restored and just visibly attain, just interesting. That's the details.
Thank you for filling in those details.
Yeah, no, because it is, I mean, it is such a big landmark that you can't drive or by Köln without seeing it. It's just huge.
It is hard to overstate both the significance and the allure of that cathedral. My wife, when she first saw it, she was just, her jaw literally dropped, and she always wants to go back. Her grandpa, who flew for the U.S. Army in World War II, the one thing, I had the pleasure to meet him, and the one thing he remembered from that time, the one thing that stood out to him, was the Cologne Cathedral.
What does it actually mean to the people in Köln to have such a phenomenal structure within the city? Does it even register still, or is it something where it's like, yeah, it's here?
Obviously can't speak for the million of people in Köln, but I would say it is significant enough to really provide identity to an extent and really know what city you're coming from and why it is a significant city. And I feel like that structure plays its significant part in that. When people take photos, when people meet along the river, like right across the river with the unobstructed view of the cathedral, is one of the most popular spots to get together for locals as for tourists. Mm-hmm. I do think it doesn't fade even when you live there, even when you see it every day.
So to some degree it defines the region. In case that all of this makes you just want to jump on an aircraft, fly over there, take your wide-angle lens, because it's a big structure, and snap some pictures, there is an option. Travel to Germany and the Rhineland. Register by May 3rd, by the way. Registration is essentially done through a down payment for the GAI trip to Germany. And of course, as always, more information is available at gai-mn.org, and then just find the respective tab and you will get to read everything there is. And should you have even more questions than that, just fire an email to language@gai-mn.org. But back to the Rhineland armchair quarterback kind of travel experience. What else do we need to know about the Rhineland?
Well, we talked a lot about the cities, and I think one thing that oftentimes is not really factored in is that it can be a quite beautiful region as well, both in a more natural way and in a way where things have been creatively repurposed and restored. So I think those are a couple of things that I want to highlight. There are regions when you go further south, the landscape, which is throughout the Rhineland region, very much shaped by the Rhine River and how it's flowed over the thousands of years, where it gets hillier and hillier the further south you go. It gets greener, more wooded. There are regions like the Eifel that some might have heard of. We call it Bergisches Land, which is really like the hill country. That are just like kind of a little ways south of Cologne, but very accessible and yet completely or mostly natural and really nice for hiking and things like that. And on the opposite end of the Rhineland, further north, what has happened in cities like Duisburg, Mönchengladbach, and some other towns up there is that old industry, like really heavy industry that used to be very big. We're talking steel, we're talking coal, things like that, things that Germany has actively been dialing back on for the past few years, maybe even decades. many of those areas have been repurposed and are now used for parks, are now used for events, are now used for museums, where you have these ginormous machinery and machines that are still there, that are really in the scope and size, like hard to imagine. And then around there are newly planted woods and greens and parks, and you can play and you can go to concerts like right in the middle of this. It has this really interesting charm of human activity and at the same time kind of like giving it back to nature. And it's a very unique atmosphere.
As a representative of the Rhineland, what are you most proud of?
I want to say my soccer team, my hometown soccer team. Unfortunately, they're not doing all that well right now.
Is that just crying?
That's actually Duisburg, because in the formative sports years, I actually happened to live in Duisburg. So that's the third city. It's not as flashy. It's not as famous. It's not as big as Düsseldorf or Cologne, which is why I haven't been talking about it much. But yeah, I'm stuck with a kind of second tier team.
And that's actually a good point, right? So beyond the beer, the soccer rivalries go deep right there. I mean, every one of these larger cities has a team, either in the major league or in the next league. And they are, again, all just a few kilometers away from each other, right? And you have very, very, very loyal fans, you know, the fans for Köln, the Düsseldorf Stadium, which is right by the fairgrounds, and Duisburg, Leverkusen, Bochum. I mean, it's just a host of cities, and they're just all together, and they all have a major league soccer team. And yeah, it's so the beer wars is one thing, the soccer wars is another.
Yep.
Soccer team is not one I would have expected, actually, but should not necessarily be surprising, considering we are a product of our culture, which for some reason it flashed just in my mind. Have you driven past the St. Paul United Stadium?
I have.
The Allianz Arena.
Allianz Field is
the München one.
Oh, that's
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't it look like the Münchner Stadion?
Well, that was the point, I think.
And it was the point.
I think so too,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it looks like a miniature version of Bayern München's stadium. So
now they just have to start to be as good as Bayern München, as much as we all love to hate Bayern München, but they are a good team.
That's big shoes to fill.
Let's hope.
Bastian, what else do we need to know before we keep some things back and shroud them in secrecy so that everybody actually does attend?
Yeah, people still need to come. Right?
I was going
to
say, like, I can't walk you through the entire night, because then it will be kind of boring to show up, and I don't want that to happen.
Right.
No, I'll mention a few. I think we'll go over a few maybe surprising personalities, mm-hmm. Historical figures and more pop culture personalities. Maybe I'll give you a little taste. We can go, well, maybe I'll do it without naming names. We can go from chancellors to soccer stars. We can go from famous writers and thinkers to top models. And have them all born or based out of Rhineland.
Ooh, intriguing.
Any ideas?
Yeah, I'm thinking. We'll do that off the record.
I have an idea, because there's only one German top model that I know. So
there were two real big international ones.
Okay. I don't know the other one.
I'm sure you do.
Potentially. But okay, so that makes for some decent Trivial Pursuit knowledge. And once again, the Rhineland Member Night, Saturday, April 27th, 6:30 through 8:30 with Bastian, who is not just one of our teachers here at the GAI, but obviously also a staunch representative of the Rhineland. Now, the question is, and I think that's my final question, do you think we'll have Kölsch?
We asked him, right? And
I know,
he's hoping.
Do you think we can get it? Can you commit?
You'd have to import it, right? It would have to be imported or Kölsch style.
I've been told that we have an importing connection.
Okay, good.
I don't know. You know, like, I don't know whether that means Ruhrgebiet beer, so the Northern Rhine Rhineland region, or if that's Altbier from Düsseldorf or Kölsch from Cologne. I don't know which one it's going to be.
I mean, you can't go wrong either way.
Either way, no. Of course
not. Yep. We're not going to go wrong any case. But I don't know. If you order Altbier and Kölsch at the same time from an importer, they might just... I don't know if they can deliver that with the rivalry going on.
Good question. Send one to the other side of the city.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Bastian, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your presentation again Saturday, April 27th, 6:30 through 8:30. And let's do a quick one more time, short little overview. What's on the menu?
We will have Sauerbraten. That's the pot roast. With all the goodies that come like alongside it. There's going to be potato dumplings. There's going to be red cabbage. There's going to be a little something before as well. We'll have like an onion tart. There will be a little treat for dessert. I think that's as much as I want to give away right now.
And tickets are available online at gai-mn.org. Claudia, what else do we have on the docket?
Let's just kind of talk about a couple other events and programs coming on. As always, we have a lot of other activities going on. And with Easter coming up here in a few weeks, we do have our annual Kinderstube Easter Egg Hunt. So that is a fundraiser for our preschool Kinderstube, but it is open to the public. And that happens Saturday, April 20th on the GEI lawn. And it happens rain or shine, so if the weather is bad, just bundle your kids up and bring them out. And we do have a couple of programs and events for the kids. So it is for babies all the way up to 7 years, but we'll make sure that we have a separate area set aside for the little ones up to 2 years, because they're just going to get run over by the older kids otherwise. So it starts at... let me take a look. Starts around 8:30, I believe, and kind of goes parallel with our Kaffeestube, with our Saturday morning breakfast. And I have been told that we will have a special Easter Kaffeestube with an Easter menu. So again, the GAI Kinderstube Easter Egg Hunt, Saturday, April 20th. Then also what happened, if you're kind of following along with our programming all spring long, where we've had sustainability and modern Germany, we're actually planning an event for kids called Earth Day for Kinder. Earth Day is actually a couple of days, the 22nd or sometime around Easter this year. So the following Saturday and Saturday, April 27th, we have a bunch of activities, Earth Day for Kinder, where kids will learn a bit more about, Earth and sustainability. And they build some seed flower bombs or whatever those things are called, and have activities throughout the house.
So there's a science component built
in.
Okay.
Yep. As always, we offer summer camps starting in June. So June through August, take a look if you have kids anywhere between 5 to 13. We have German language summer camps for 2 months, running from the middle of June through the middle of August. Different topics for some of the older kids. We're actually offering MINT, or German and Science. MINT is the German version of science. What's it called? Science?
STEM.
Yep. Yeah, so science, MINT. Technology, engineering,
yep.
And math.
Yep. So MINT is the German equivalent. Mm-hmm. So we're offering some MINT camps. We're offering a whole range of summer camps, anything ranging from arts and crafts, cooking, robotics, science. So take a look at our website about the summer camps. And then last but not least, as an adult, you're always encouraged to take a look at our language offerings. We have a few classes starting here in the middle of April, anything from beginner to advanced, and those are listed under our Spring Spezial section. So activities for the whole family with our Easter egg hunt, Earth Day for Kinder, summer camps, and for adults, Spring Spezial, our classes, and our regional highlight on the Rhineland.
Yeah, once again, that's Saturday, April 27th, 6:30 through 8:30. And, of course, everyone is invited. Tickets are available at gai-mn.org. And it's not just going to be Bastian's presentation, but also the appropriate servings of food and hopefully authentic beer as much as we can. Anything else, or was that it for today?
I believe that's it.
That's it. Bastian, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Claudia, as always, thank you.
My pleasure.
And that wraps this episode. We'll be back again next month with one or perhaps two installments of the GEI podcast. As always, if you do have any questions, please bring them to our attention at language@gei-mn.org. Again, that's language@gei-mn.org. That's it. Michael signing off. Until next time. Tschüss.